want your soul.
Grandpa Henry was a reclusive man. He didn't just like being left alone. He hated people with a burning passion, something I'm sure was greatly responsible for his ruthless business practices that helped him turn his father's wealth into an eye-popping fortune. Society returned the favor, and he'd turned into an angry, friendless man by the time retirement came calling. Out of work, out of people who gave a shit, and stuck in an increasingly loveless marriage, he became more and more like Ebenezer Scrooge as time went by. After Grandma Nancy passed away, he decided he had had enough of humanity and retreated to his large manor out in the wilderness, away from the prying eyes of his mostly greedy family. Rival capitalists and intrusive journalists, fully embracing the hermit lifestyle. Unlike Mr. Scrooge, there was no one around for miles to try and melt his frigid heart, and he died as he lived, cold and alone. It had been well over a decade since I'd last seen him. Hell, I was still in high school at that time, and my parents dragged me into his palatial house and forced me to smile and deal with his loathsome attitude. He grumbled, picked faults with every little thing my mom did, and went on bizarre, bigoted rants. It was very unpleasant. I only realized this morning when I was packing my bags that it was the last time I ever got to meet with him. I couldn't work myself up to tears, but I did feel some semblance of guilt welling within me for completely ignoring him. It was my dad who told me about his passing. Everybody wanted a slice of the pie that Grandpa Henry was going to serve after he died, and my father was no different. Being barely able to contain his glee when he invited me to attend his funeral, and more interestingly, the reading of his will later on that evening. I had made up my mind to skip the whole thing as I had a very important meeting on the day of the funeral, but mostly because I wanted to avoid the inheritance-related family drama that was bound to follow the reading of the will. My girlfriend Allison was the one who made me change my plans, fascinated as she was with the prospect of visiting a Victorian-style manor. So, is it as beautiful and romantic as you had imagined? I asked as I drove up the winding road, the tires kicking up dust as they crushed the gravel underneath. She grinned. It's better. It truly was a beautiful sight, undulating hills covered in grass that curved and warped as frosty winds danced on them. Rolling hills that surrounded the summit on which Grandpa Henry had built his little palace. I slowed down as we came closer to our destination, taking the time to properly drink in the view. Towering turrets that thrust up into the bright moonlit sky like spears of ancient warriors, arched glass windows proudly looking down upon the well-maintained garden, enclosed by a sturdy wall that finished its circumscribing journey on a wrought iron gate. It was a place that stood the test of time, maintaining its dignity and poise throughout. Snow-capped peaks that were barely visible at this time of night dotted the distant landscape behind the imposing manor, completing the picturesque scenery. "Oh my God," Allison giggled, "your grandfather even had a butler." And yes, he did. Frank was the only person in the world who could tolerate Grandpa's surly and entitled attitude without devolving into its fits of uncontrollable rage. Or at least that's what I heard. He fiddled with the buttons of his black suit and then brought his gloved hand out to open Allison's door when I brought the car to a halt. "Good evening, ma'am," he greeted her warmly before turning to me. "Good evening, sir. Please head to the living room up ahead. Everyone is waiting for you." I shivered as the cold air stabbed at my skin. Are we really the last to arrive? Fuck. I could hear the murmuring as I hopped the short stairs to the front door. The chattering instantly stopped as I soundlessly pushed the door open, and more than a dozen heads swung in our direction. Wood crackled and burned in the fireplace, desperately trying to sweep aside the awkward silence with its dying embers. I held the door open, allowing Allison to walk before me, who smiled and thanked me. Well, well, well. Looks like the prodigal son has arrived. Finally decide to join us vultures, have you? To see what dear father left for you? Yeah, it's good to see you too, Uncle Freddy. I greeted the blonde, balding man wearing a bright red sweater. My father's younger brother was as caustic as ever. Cut it out, Freddy, my mom said as she came in and gave me a hug before helping us put our coats away. I shook my dad's hand, waved at my sister and her husband, and then went and sat on one of the empty couches, pulling Allison close into me. Can we please get started with what we came here for? Uncle Freddy asked, clearly annoyed. Jonathan, he looked at a man in a gray suit who nodded and stood up. Good evening, everyone, he said as he stood near the fireplace, such that all eyes in the spacious room were on him. I am Henry's lawyer, here to tell you the terms of his will. I'll keep it simple since it's best to not waste time. $300 million, he continued. That is the sum total of Henry's movable and immovable assets, and that is what is at stake here, tonight. Holy shit, I thought. That is a fucking shitload of money. Way more than what I was expecting to hear. And if the furious whispers around me were anything to go by, I wasn't the only one feeling this way. Jonathan cleared his throat and the room went silent again. Now, as is written in the will, all of that money will go to the winners of the inheritance game, and that you will participate in tonight. The what? A game? What is the meaning of this? Is this a joke? The voices rose, with everyone shouting to make themselves heard over the din, which in turn got even louder, increasingly sounding like the buzzing of a giant nest of bees that someone had chucked a stone at. Jonathan tried to get them to quiet down, but no one bothered to listen. So he threw his hands up in frustration and walked out. When he came back into the room, he was flanked by two men wearing goat masks and carrying 12-gauge pump-action shotguns. A sudden, fearful silence fell upon the room like a thick, suffocating shroud as people tried to make sense of this strange sight. Now, I'm going to explain the rules of the inheritance game to you. Please don't interrupt me. I'll take any questions you have after I'm done speaking, Jonathan said authoritatively. Your family is a little bit weird, Allison chuckled nervously, and I held her hand tightly, in a reassuring manner. Jonathan began explaining the rules of the game, and everyone listened in a shocked silence. Barring a few gasps, and some oh my gods here, and some smug, disbelieving snorts there. I'll transcribe the rules here as best as I remember them. Rule number one, everyone sitting in the room plays the game, regardless of their age. Rule number two, to win, survive until the crack of dawn at 6 a.m. The inheritance money will be split equally among all those who survive. Rule number three, escaping or attacking the administrators will result in immediate disqualification and on-the-spot execution. Intentionally damaging the cameras will result in the same. Rule number four, at least one less than half the players must die. If that doesn't happen by the morning, everyone will be executed and the money goes to the board of directors of the company. Rule number five. Each murder costs $10 million. For each person you directly kill, you lose $10 million of your share of the inheritance money. Rule number six. Weapons can be bought from the inventory shack near the swimming pool in the backyard using the inheritance money. Caution. If the amount of money you've spent or lost exceeds the share of the inheritance money you'll receive if you survive, then you too shall be executed. On the other hand, your expenses have no impact on the inheritance other surviving players will receive. Rule number seven. If more than half of the players agree, some or all of the rest can be removed from the game and executed, and no amount will be deducted from your inheritance. You must get the signatures of the needed number of players on a piece of paper, along with the names of those you want to remove from the game, and submit it to the inventory shack. For a second, after Jonathan had finished speaking, we gawped at him in amazement. Then everyone exploded in a thunderous uproar. Fear, disbelief, outrage, one could find every flavor of emotion that you could reasonably expect people to have in a situation like this. It was Uncle Mitchell, my dad's youngest brother, who ended up becoming our unofficial spokesperson, simply because of his volume. "You can't be fucking serious, Jonathan," he shouted. "This is fucking disgusting. This is a joke. Stop this and tell us about that real goddamn will," he thundered. "Well, I'm afraid it's not a joke," Jonathan replied calmly. "And I shall make a demonstration of the seriousness of your situation." He then signaled at his henchmen to his right, who walked up and pulled his gun up. The shotgun rocked in his hand and boomed, sending up a small cloud of smoke and making me momentarily deaf. And almost instantly, Uncle Mitchell's head bloomed into the most grotesque, red-colored flower I'd ever seen in my life. And then the screaming started. I think I must have been around 10 years old when I went out and bought a CD of the 1987 RoboCop movie and sneakily watched it along with my sister Patty when our parents weren't home. That was the start of my obsession with blood and gore. I devoured every R-rated film that I could get my hands on, not caring how trash the movie actually was, as long as there was visceral, gut-churning violence, I was game. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I thought I had a strong stomach for this kind of stuff. But I was wrong. Nothing prepares you for the real thing. Uncle Mitchell's head exploded, spraying blood and chunks of flesh and bone everywhere. There was an unwanted wetness on my face, and I had to blink my eyes to clear my vision. I shook my head to get rid of the annoying ringing sound in my ears that accompanied the deafeningly loud boom of the shotgun, and then I wiped my face. By the time I fought my way out of the disorientation caused by the gunshot, I saw there was complete pandemonium in the room. Uncle Mitchell's boyfriend, Wyatt, was emptying the contents of his stomach on the carpeted floor. Some of the guests were hysterically screeching their lungs off, while Jonathan and his two lackeys in the goat mask were already making their way out of the sliding glass door that led to the swimming pool. Hey, you okay?" Allison asked, her beautiful raven hair now carrying streaks of a vile shade of crimson. I nodded. "We're going to die. We are going to die." James, my brother-in-law, whimpered on the couch to my left as Patty tried to comfort him. It was my dad who brought some order to the chaos. Ashen-faced, hands trembling, he staggered past his brother's semi-headless corpse and clapped nervously as he positioned himself where the murderous lawyer had stood a couple of minutes ago. "I know," he croaked before he took a deep breath and began speaking loudly. "I know it's hard. But this is not the time to grieve or lose our heads to fear. We need to think of a way out of this situation." "Well, what's there to think about?" spat Uncle Freddy. "There were 18 of us here. One less than half, that is, at least 8 of us, need to fucking die." Someone started sobbing as he verbalized this. 17, Patty said softly. "There's only 17 left now." "Well, we can't kill each other," Uncle Brad, Grandpa Henry's oldest son, exclaimed. "This is our fucking family. We're not going to slaughter each other for some sick fucking game." "Grandpa Henry was an asshole anyways." "Well, what do you suggest we do, you smartass?" Uncle Freddy then snapped. "Hold hands and walk to our desks with a smile on our faces?" Wyatt, Mitchell's boyfriend, then cried as there was a flash of disgust on Freddy's face. "We can try to escape," I offered. "Run in different directions all at once. They can't possibly have the necessary resources to track all of us down simultaneously and kill us, right? Run to a place where we can get a signal on our phones and get the cops." "And what if they do get to us?" Uncle Freddy asked pointedly. "What if they kill us all, huh? What then?" I sat back. I had no answer to that. "We can fight," Allison said, clutching my hand tightly. Everyone turned to look at her. "We can all go and buy weapons from the inventory shack and use them to fight our way out." "Nah, it's too damn risky," Freddy muttered, running his fingers through whatever little hair he had on his head. "They're watching us right now. They could kill us on the spot if we tried something like that." "Then what do you suggest we do, you asshole?" Uncle Brad thundered. "Because to me it seems like you actually want to play this game." "Oh, how fucking dare you, Brad." "Please, please," my mom begged. "Don't fight. Don't give them what they want." "Freddy's right." I turned my head to see who said that. Cameron, Uncle Brad's son-in-law, stood up. "All of the suggestions that have been made here are great, honestly, but it's too risky." "We can't. There's too many variables." "I understand that, son," began my Uncle Brad. "No, you don't." Cam cut him off sharply. "No, you don't, Dad. Brandy's pregnant. We're going to have a child. He put his hand on his wife's shoulder then, who buried her head in her hands. Uncle Brad then gawped at them as his wife cried out and hurried over to comfort their daughter. An uncomfortable silence choked the conversation out of the room, and I sat there just staring at the soft, hypnotic flames in the fireplace. The wood crackled loudly and out of tune with my cousin sobbing. "Hi," Cameron said, awkwardly breaking the silence. I think we need some time to ourselves. How about we all go to our rooms and take some time to think? There's still time, right?" The tension was somewhat diffused at that, and everyone began to get up. "Not me," Freddy said obstinately. "I'm staying here to keep an eye on the back door. Can't trust you all to not sneak out of here and buy a weapon." "Jesus, Freddy," my dad said. "No one here is going to betray our family." "Well, you can't fucking know that." "Yes, I do. Whatever problems we might have, I still have faith in this family, and you need to as well." He didn't look like he was going to be convinced, but one stern Freddy from his wife, and he reluctantly quit his grumbling and stomped up the stairs to his bedroom. The room that was assigned to us was on the ground floor itself, and I was listlessly walking towards it when Allison pulled my hand and dragged me off to the kitchen. I looked at her confused as she furiously started digging through the various drawers. "What are you doing?" I asked. "Looking," she replied as she stood on her toes to look at the mostly empty shelves. "All the knives are gone. There's nothing here that can be used as a weapon." "Jesus, Allie." She then jogged over to the stove and turned it on. "Wow, this works. Why? A gas explosion would threaten the administrators too." "Allie, what are you doing?" She then stopped searching and came over and hugged me. I'm sorry. I was the one who forced you to come here." I wiped her tears away. "It's okay. Let's just focus on surviving, okay?" And she nodded. "Besides, Victorian mansions and murder mysteries have a very ancient relationship, so we can't exactly be surprised that this happened tonight, right?" She chuckled and buried her head in my chest. "Okay," she said. "Give me a brief overview of your family. Who's who and all that jazz." I raised my eyebrow. "Just to know who can potentially vote us off the island," she said. I nodded. "All right, Grandpa Henry had 4 sons. There's Uncle Brad, his wife, and their 2 daughters. Both are married, including Brandy, who just announced her pregnancy. Then comes my father, 2 children, me and Patty. Then Uncle Freddy. He has 1 son, Vincent, who came here with his boyfriend. Lastly, there is Uncle Mitchell and his boyfriend, Wyatt." "So there's 4 smaller families in this large one?" she asked. "Yep," I nodded. 6 people each in Uncle Brad's and my father's families. 4 in Uncle Freddy's case and Wyatt." "Okay, 6, 6, 4, and 1, she said. "And you need 9 for a majority. Which means that assuming families stick together, any potential vote would basically be a face-off between our family and Uncle Brad's. It's the only mathematical possibility," I replied. "The entire fight would be about getting the support of Uncle Freddy's family." "Do you think Cameron knew this?" Allie asked. "Maybe that's why he split us up, to try and get Uncle Freddy's support?" My eyes widened at the thought. "Fuck, what do we do?" "All right, let's take this one step at a time. Who do you think Uncle Freddy will side with?" I shook my head. "I don't know. I mean, he hated my Uncle Mitchell. Thought that he was the one responsible for turning Vincent, his son, gay, so he'll avoid siding with whichever group has Wyatt. But Vincent owes a lot to Uncle Mitchell and Wyatt," I added. "They had supported him when Freddy threatened to disown him for his sexuality. He wouldn't vote to kill Wyatt off that easily, I don't think. So if we get Wyatt and Vincent along with his boyfriend on our side, we would have 9 members," Allison stated. "Holy fuck, Allie, are you really suggesting that we kill them off?" "No," she said loudly and then lowered her voice. "No, but we can force a stalemate. Even if Cam and Uncle Brad somehow manage to get Uncle Freddy and his wife on their side, they can't kill us off. They'd still be 1 member short. And we can think then about what to do afterwards." Going behind their backs would be a massive breach of trust," I warned. "We have no proof that they're going to conspire against us either." "Well, there's no harm in being cautious," she argued. "Do you really want to be caught off guard and get killed over presumptions of family unity?" This is our lives we're talking about here. All right, well, what if our actions rouse their suspicions and become the reason they decide to act against us? I countered. All right, well, it's possible, she agreed. But we really can't leave this up to chance. Cameron would be desperate enough to do anything to protect his pregnant wife. I mean, wouldn't you do the same? Fuck, I swore again. How do we do this? We can't just waltz into the room. It's too suspicious. Well, let's ask Wyatt to go and talk to Vincent and his boyfriend. They have a close relationship. It wouldn't be that weird if he's the one to talk to them, Allison said. All right, and then we can go and speak with Uncle Freddy to see where his head's at, I added. We decided to split up. Allison went to talk to my parents and Patty about what we were planning on doing, while I chose to take the stairs and go up to Wyatt's room. As I knocked on his door, I noticed movement to my right. It was Cameron, coming out of Uncle Freddy's room. He nervously nodded at me and scampered off. Not good. Not good at all. The door opened and Wyatt's disheveled and puffy face popped out of the darkness. It was evident he had been grieving. Hey, Adam, he greeted me weakly. Hey, do you mind if I come in? I asked hastily. He nodded and moved back, letting me in. A couple of minutes later, I had informed him about our assumptions and intentions, his eyes growing more and more alert with each second as he grasped the gravity of his situation. So you understand what you need to do, right? I questioned him. Frame it as a matter of saving everyone and not betrayal, okay? He shook his head. I can try, but please be warned. Vincent and Freddy have a very, very complicated relationship. That boy craves his father's approval more than anything. He could easily be manipulated into doing something he would later regret. Even if his boyfriend objects to it? Yes. And that would be enough to give them a majority and kill us all. Okay, all right, I understand. But it doesn't change the fact that we must try regardless. I then got up, stretching my arms, which popped loudly, and said, I'm going to leave now. Go to him a couple of minutes after that. And if anybody asks, tell them that I was just checking up on you. I shook his hand and slipped out of his room, and then I hurried downstairs to find Allison waiting for me, panic in her eyes. It's your dad, she said, scared. He's missing. What? Shh, please. She started looking around to see if anyone was eavesdropping. We don't know if someone from the family is responsible for it yet or if he's just off somewhere doing whatever. Regardless, we can't let the others know. It'll weaken our position. I ran past her, ignoring her warning and frantically checking for my father in every nook and cranny of this damned house. I saw my mom outside her room looking inconsolable as Patty tried to reason with her, with her decidedly frightened-looking husband hovering around. What in the fuck happened? I asked, slightly out of breath. Mom said she went to the bathroom to clean up, Patty replied, but when she came out, Dad was gone. We've looked all over, but we just can't find him, Allison added. Somebody's got him, Adam, my mom cried. They've killed him for the money. We don't know that, okay? Calm down. Have you looked up? I was cut off by loud, angry shouts from behind me. I turned around and saw Cameron coming down the stairs, holding a piece of paper in his hand, with Wyatt begging and pleading along the way. The others were right behind them, scared, guilty, but also resolute. Fuck, things just keep going from bad to worse. Jesus Christ, James, Patty's husband, whispered, his voice trembling now. I bolted towards the living room and quickly stood in front of the glass door that opened up to the pool. Hey, 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 I shouted. You guys do not need to fucking do this. Get out of the way, Adam, Cameron said, his voice low and teeth gnashed furiously together. I told you, Wyatt shouted. Step aside. I noticed a certain madness in Cam's eyes and realized with a sinking feeling he was beyond the point where reason or logic would sway him. You can't do this, Patty yelled. Well, I'm sorry, but there's no other way, said Freddy as he nudged Cameron. You're going to kill us, my mom cried. You're killing us. She then walked up to Uncle Brad. Brad, when he turned away in shame, she pleaded to his wife. Samantha, please. Move, goddammit. Cameron shoved me aside, making my ribs crash into the glass and walk past me. James then slammed into him, and they both fell and started struggling with each other. Freddy tried to rush to Cameron, but he was held back by a desperate Wyatt. The others just stood silently gawking at the spectacle. Adam, Allison screamed, we need to make that paper worthless. It's the only way. She then picked up a wooden chair and began swinging it like a club. My heart began to pound in my chest, as it instantly became clear what she was asking of me. It would change everything, but it was the only way. My eyes hardened as I resolved myself to do the unthinkable. I walked away from the door and towards my Aunt Samantha. She looked at me confused, before her facial muscles contorted into an expression of disbelieving horror as she saw the look on my face and understood my intentions. I pounced on her, shoving her to the ground before wrapping my hands around her throat, and I began to squeeze so hard my fingers turned white. Everything had turned into white noise for me as I focused on the unholy task at hand. It was a marvel that no one dragged me off of her. I didn't know it at that time, but Allison fought like a woman possessed to keep everyone away from me, with Patty and Mom doing their best to support her. The nerves in my arms bulged and the muscles surrounding them pulled and tightened so hard I felt they were going to pop out. Aunt Samantha thrashed around like a fish out of water, scratching at my arms to get herself free, but the fight slowly and surely left her. I squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until the light left her eyes and her arms dropped to her side, cold and limp, and then I squeezed some more, my fingers now digging into the flesh of her corpse. I had just killed someone. And it wasn't some random stranger off the streets that I had dragged into a dimly lit alley and murdered for money, while using the darkness of cover to shield my conscience from the grotesque display. No, it was my own Aunt Samantha whose life I had choked out with my bare hands under the harsh, seemingly judgmental light of the ornate lamps that hung from the ceiling. Memories, ancient and unwanted, flashed through my mind unbidden as I knelt over her corpse, motionless. I could almost taste the cookies she loved to make for us. I thought to myself, look away now. I tore my gaze off her lifeless eyes that still glinted under the soft glow from the fireplace and took in the scene around me, which seemed to play out in slow motion. Allison was hovering around me protectively, brandishing a mangled, blood-stained chair as a weapon while roaring like a lioness protecting her cubs, as she and an exhausted Wyatt tried to fend off Uncle Brad, whose sharp blue eyes were filled with a sort of anguish I had never seen in my life, hinting at the deep wound I had inflicted on his very soul. I averted my own eyes quickly, before the guilt could successfully rip my mind to pieces. I just murdered his wife, my aunt. Uncle Freddy was sprawled on the ground nearby, unconscious, with blood gushing out of a gash of his forehead, ruining the expensive rug underneath. His wife, my Aunt Susan, was on her knees beside him, worriedly checking his pulse. Out in the backyard, I could see my brother-in-law, James, locked in a desperate struggle for survival with both Cameron and Aiden, Uncle Brad's other son-in-law. We were into this now. What the fuck just happened? Just a slight nudge and we had descended into a murderous madness with me taking the lead and plunging down to the deepest depths of hell. And why? A loud splash of water then jolted me back to reality. He can't swim! He can't swim! A feminine scream from upstairs dashed down at us after James sent Cameron flying into the pool with a solid kick to the chest. Aiden wasted no time and dove after him. Uncle Brad, in a fit of monstrous rage, tore through the human barricade, preventing his advance and charged in my direction. I scampered off to the side, terrified more at the prospect of what I could potentially do to the grieving man than anything else. But I needn't have worried. He didn't come for me, but cradled his wife's head in his lap and sobbed uncontrollably. Then I felt the hand on my shoulder. Adam, the hand shook me. Adam, it was Wyatt, looking at me wide-eyed. It's not over, he whispered furiously. Galen didn't vote, but everyone else did. Even now, they outnumber us by one. We have to do something. My eyes quickly swept the surroundings once again, and sure enough, Vincent and his boyfriend Galen were nowhere to be seen. Now, Adam, Wyatt's voice trembled, that paper could still kill us. Understood, I said, and I nodded and got on my feet gingerly. Allison, get our people out of here. I'm going to be right back. Our people? When had my subconscious become comfortable with that distinction? This is my family. My feet were moving before I even realized it. I bolted out of the open glass door, the chilly mountain breeze crawling up my spine. I stumbled as I skidded on the slippery floor outside, but swiftly regained my balance and went running past the people huddled in a corner near the pool. "He's going to the shack," Brenda, my Uncle Brad's other daughter, shouted. "Stop him." But I was already upon the small brick-and-mortar guest house that had been renamed by our tormentors as the Inventory Shack. I nudged the door open, and a bright white light came pouring out onto the tiled floor underneath my feet, casually overpowering the weak moonlight already present there. I took a deep breath and stepped in. They had hung a black cloth across the room, effectively splitting it into two. The only thing on my side was a chair and a table, and Frank, Grandpa Henry's butler, was sitting on the former. I turned to my left and stared down the barrel of a shotgun. "Frank," I said accusingly, "good evening, Master Adam. Congratulations on being the first one to arrive at the Inventory Shack. How can I help you?" he said jovially. "You can start by asking the son of a goat-fucking whore to quit pointing a gun at me," I spat as I looked venomously at that masked asshole. "A necessary precaution," he replied, dismissively waving his hand. "So, you interested in purchasing something?" He offered what looked like a menu of a high-end restaurant to me. I skimmed through it, noticing it listed guns and their prices. "Just give me a shotgun," I snapped, tossing the menu down on the table. "Which one?" "Well, I'll take whatever the chef recommends." He nodded and then clapped his hands. Moments later, another scumbag in a goat mask walked out from behind the curtain, holding a sleek black shotgun in his hand. "This is the Mossberg 500," said Frank. "It holds 5 shells. If you count the one in the chamber, that's 6 shots without reloading." I walked forward to take the gun. "That'll be 100 million. "What? Jesus Christ. Happy hunting," Frank added with a smile as I walked out of the shack. Now $110 million down, ready to stain my soul with the blood of some more family members. Aiden had successfully rescued Cameron and was now performing CPR on him. I felt a painful tightening in my chest as I realized I was going to make all of his efforts useless. Brenda shrieked when she saw me. "He's got a gun! Aiden, come on, we have to go, please!" She pulled at her husband's arm, who refused to budge, so intent he was on saving his friend. I got closer, my footsteps now echoing off the floor. "Adam, please," she begged, "don't do this." She shook her husband again. "Aiden, let's go." I cocked my head and looked inside the house, only to see Uncle Brad and the others scurrying in different directions. My actions had caused total fucking chaos. My head swooned and my knees trembled as a massive explosion of guilt from deep within me threatened to destroy my control over my senses. Brenda finally made Aiden aware of the impending danger stalking him and dragged him off into the house, shouting expletives at me the whole way. I stopped near Cameron's wet body. A trail of water and saliva ran from the corner of his mouth all the way down to the ground. He coughed once, making his watery lungs gurgle. I then aimed the gun at his chest, and I hesitated. Do it. My parents, my sister, Allison, their lives were on the line. And Cameron would do the same. I knew it. No, he did do it. Only James and I didn't let him succeed. My shoulders tightened as my finger neared the trigger. Adam, please, please don't. I looked up to see where that muffled voice was coming from. I couldn't quite make it out from here, but I knew it was Brandy, peering down at us from the darkness of her room upstairs. Please, she said hoarsely, as if every word pulled and scraped at her tired throat. We are going to have a child. Let him go. Tears blurred my vision and I faltered, but only for a second. Nah, I have to do this, Brandy. No, you don't, she cried. End this. We'll all run away together, just as you said. Please, just stop this. Nah, it's too late for that now. No, it isn't. We can still... I cut her off. Did you sign that paper? Silence. Well, did you? I asked again, sighing as I got no answer other than some pain-filled sobs. Look away, Brandy. You shouldn't watch it. Her screaming was almost as loud as the boom of the shotgun. I found them in our bedroom, looking extremely shaken. Allison jumped out of her chair and wrapped her arms around me when I entered the room. I'm sorry, baby, she wept. I'm so sorry. Well, that's okay. I had to do it. It was the only way. That's not what she meant, Adam. Patty interrupted me. It's Mom. My heart skipped a beat. What about Mom? They've taken her, Wyatt replied, nervously twiddling his thumbs as he paced around the room. Vincent came downstairs while you were in the shack and helped the others drag her upstairs after knocking her out. God damn it. Why didn't any of you fucking do anything? I yelled. I was helping James. I didn't pay attention, Patty replied softly. Brad hit Allison on the back of her head and I rushed to help her, Wyatt added. It just happened so fast, man. It was fucking chaos. I turned and walked out of the room, tightly clenching the shotgun in my hands as the others ran after me, asking me not to be hasty. But I was blinded with rage. First my dad goes missing and now they dare take my mom? Mom, where are you? I screamed as I entered the beautiful living room, which was now marred with my Aunt Samantha's corpse. Mom, where is she? I'll fucking kill anybody who hurts her, I yelled. Adam, someone shouted from above. She's here. I recognized that voice. It was Aiden. I should have shot that bastard when I had the chance. Don't come up here, or I'm going to throw her out the fucking window, he warned. It might only be the first floor, but let's see how her skull takes it if I drop her head first. My heart pounded as my body burned with anger. What do you want, Aiden? Allison asked from beside me. Fuck you, you psycho bitch. I'm not talking to you. What do you want then, you asshole? I spat. A simple exchange. Your mom for your gun. Oh, fuck you. It's not going to happen. James swore under his breath. Don't listen to this shit. Just go upstairs and shoot that motherfucker. Fuck no, James swore under his breath. I put my finger on my lip and he shut up. Well, how do we know you won't just kill us afterwards, Aiden? Well, you just have to take that risk, I guess. Oh, you can't expect us to agree to that, Wyatt exclaimed. Silence followed. I guess they were arguing about how to proceed. A new voice joined in a couple of tense moments later. Hey, Adam, it's me, Freddy. How about this? You leave the shotgun near the stairs, and we'll come pick it up when we're dropping Daisy off. Allison tugged at my arm and quickly whispered in my ears. Okay, we'll do it. But the gun will be on the coffee table in the center of the room. All right, fine. This is fucking stupid, James swore after we were sitting in our room post-negotiations. If we're giving them the gun, we might as well write our own names on a piece of paper and take it to the damn shack. I'll do anything to save Mom, James, I replied. Anything. But you're not, are you? If you give him that gun, she's just going to end up dead anyways. Don't worry, we're not going to die, Allison said, because we're not giving them a loaded gun. Well, I think they might have guessed that already, Patty said. Then why are they agreeing to this? Well, they'll take a significant advantage away from us, Allie replied. And don't forget, we are barely even matched at this point. 7-7. Four in Uncle Freddy's family, Uncle Brad, his two daughters, and one surviving son-in-law. And that is if we include your missing father and kidnapped mom, and exclude Galen, who refused to vote to kill us. If we lose the gun, and he changes his mind, we could be back to where we started. Yes, and it'll be harder for us to stop them this time, I added, now that they know what I'm capable of. No, what we are capable of, Allison corrected me as she grabbed my hand reassuringly. It was a collective decision on our part. We all chose to help you do it, Adam. Not to mention, they forced us into it. I won't let you shoulder the guilt all by yourself. I wouldn't allow it. Yeah, Wyatt nodded. I pushed you into killing Cameron, too. I killed him just as much as you did, honestly. I could tell that he genuinely meant that by the heavy guilt and sorrow I saw in his puffy eyes. So what now? James asked. Well, I think we should try and take both the gun and Daisy, Allison answered. I have a plan. About 15 minutes later, I was back in the living room, shouting to make my voice heard upstairs. All right. I placed the gun on the table. You can bring my mom downstairs now. Aiden then replied almost immediately. I've changed my mind, Adam. We'll take the gun first and then send your mother downstairs. They must have talked amongst themselves. Allison shook her head furiously and mouthed no at me. It's not going to happen, Aiden. You bring my mom down and take the gun up simultaneously. Don't test me, Adam. I'll hurt her. I'll kill her. I swear it. No, you don't test me, Aiden. Do as I tell you, or I'm going to come marching up those stairs and fucking blow everybody's heads off with a shotgun. Do you understand? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? I could hear them arguing with each other now. A short while later, he shouted that he was coming down and asked us to clear the area. So I ran and hid beneath the staircase. I could see Allison hiding behind a curving wall, holding one of the legs of the chair she had been using in the last fight. The broken end sharp enough to pierce skin now. Wyatt, Patty, and James were similarly positioned, just out of sight of anyone coming downstairs. I heard heavy, lumbering footsteps above me. It sounded like three people. I clenched my fists as I heard my mother groan. "Do you see it?" Freddy whispered. "Yeah, it's there," Aiden replied, "and nobody's around either." "All right, well, be careful." "I will," Aiden replied. Aiden sprinted towards the coffee table, quickly picking up the gun. "Fucking thing is empty, just like you said." "What are you doing? Why would you even check it? Don't waste..." I cut him off when I ran out from my hiding spot and charged at a shocked Aiden, slamming into him and taking him through the glass table, which shattered on impact, the broken glass lacerating my arms. James and Wyatt followed suit, attacking Freddy, who was desperately trying to retreat back upstairs. Aiden and I struggled on top of numerous shards of glass, trying to wrestle the gun away from the grasp of the other person. When it looked like I was going to get the upper hand, he gave up entirely and started raining heavy blows down on my back, knocking the wind out of my lungs. I groped for a piece of glass I could use as a weapon, my hand finally finding something usable, getting cut up pretty badly in the process. Gritting my teeth, I fought through the pain and I tried to plunge my makeshift knife into Aiden's ribs, but he was faster, and a sharp pain erupted into my sides, making stars dance in front of my eyes. The glass sank in with a sickening thunk, and I almost blacked out, but he twisted the glass and pushed it in deeper, making me scream in agony. I rolled off him, and he quickly jumped on top of me, ready to stab me again. He might as well have finished me off if it hadn't been for Allison, who swung her piece of wood hard at his head, and then kept on swinging till he collapsed on top of me. I took full advantage of his descent and thrust my shard of glass at his throat. It was his own momentum that sealed his fate, the glass going in so deep that there was absolutely no hope for him left. Warm, coppery blood poured down on my face and neck, and I frantically pushed him off me, spitting to clear my mouth. "You okay?" Allison asked as she helped me get up. I nodded. It hurt like hell, but I'd live. And that was what was truly important. I picked the gun off the broken table and hobbled over to where James, Patty, and Wyatt were fighting with a wrathful Freddy who was trying to fight his way to me, using what looked like a slat from a bed to fend them off. I quickly pulled out the shells from my shotgun and began stuffing them into the gun. "Aiden!" Freddy shouted, but then a flash of fear crossed his face as he saw me loading the gun. More footsteps on the staircase. Others were running down to see what had just happened here, but Freddy stopped them as he himself scrambled for the stairs. "No, everybody go back upstairs." At that moment, I pointed the gun in his direction and without hesitation, pulled the trigger. Gore splattered the family portrait of the wall behind him as the shells punched a hole through his chest. I had just killed the third member of my family and was now $130 million down. I laughed maniacally at the sheer hopelessness of my situation. How fucking insane is this? My hand hurt terribly, and it made me stop laughing. As the fight ended and the adrenaline wore off, a stabbing pain came rushing up the nerves in my arm and assaulted my brain, making me drop the gun with a ringing clang. I collapsed to my knees, fiercely clutching the wrist of my wounded hand with the other. The deep cut throbbed, but the blood which was pumping out to the beat of a metaphorical drum stopped trying to escape my body, if only a little. "Adam," my mom cried, "you're hurt." I grunted. "Yeah, just a scratch. How about you, Mom?" I could see her body shiver. "I'm fine. I have a slight headache, but nothing more." "Well, that's good." A slight bump on the head was a small price to pay for her survival, especially when compared to the ordeal that Aiden had in store for her. That made me think of the debt I had now found myself in. "You should sit down, Daisy," Allison advised. "You might have a concussion." She then helped me get up. "Come on, we need to do something about that hand of yours," she said. "We have a first aid box in our bathroom. You can use that," James suggested. I looked at him and pointed at the gun with my elbow. "Take it. Don't let anybody come down." If they try and force their way through, just kill them. With his actions tonight, James had more than earned my trust. By taking on both Aiden and Cameron, kicking the ladder into the pool, he had shown himself to be extremely reliable. Besides, I didn't want to give the gun to Patty because while I would trust her with my life in most situations, I couldn't do so in this case as I didn't think she had what it takes to kill somebody. Now, you might say that it was extremely stupid of me to let anybody else take the gun, no matter how much I believed in them. But I was exhausted, physically and emotionally. I just wanted a little peace and quiet, to be away from anything that reminded me of the horror we had found ourselves in, if only for a minute. But of course I kept half the remaining shells in my pocket. Allison led me to the bathroom before hitting the light switch. The room was instantly bathed in a soft yellow glow, the light gently bouncing off the marbled floor and walls. She turned on the faucet and I winced as the water rapidly smashed against my hand, threatening to widen the painful rift. I rotated my wrist to properly clean the area while Allison fetched the kit from a shelf behind me. "This will need some stitches," she said as she applied the antiseptic. "Unfortunately, I can't do that right now, so I'll just apply dressing." They didn't teach you that in the army?" I asked. She smiled. "I just don't have the tools right now, you smartass." "They were either just not there or did the administrators take them out?" I wondered. "I don't know. I think it's the former." "Why?" "Well, I don't know," she shrugged. "Something just seems off about all this." "Yeah, well, it is a little bit out of the ordinary that we're being made to kill our own family members," I said wryly. She glanced at me, her green eyes full of sorrow and empathy, eyes that threatened to pull my own grief out of that dark place I had hastily buried it in. "I'm so sorry, baby. I can't even imagine how hard this must be for you." "Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. So you were saying?" I asked quickly, changing the subject. "Well, have you seen the cameras?" she asked as she tightly wrapped the bandage around my hand. "Yeah, they have a shit ton of blind spots." "They do?" I said. "Yes," she exclaimed. "Don't you think it's weird? If your grandpa had planned all of this out, then each and every inch of this house should be covered by those CCTVs. But it's not. The way things stand, it's far more likely that those cameras were set up by your average nutty, reclusive old man than a raging, sadistic psychopath." I felt very confused now. "And the gas in the kitchen," she added, "it still works. Why? Why would they risk a possible gas explosion? Makes no sense. The whole game seems to have set up on short notice, maybe immediately after Henry's death. Well, what could that mean?" "What if your grandpa didn't set this up, Adam? I mean, have you seen the will, like physically, held it in your hands and carefully perused it?" she asked. I could see the confused expression on my bloody and bruised face in the mirror. "Well, then who else could it be? Someone from the company wanting to take out the legitimate heirs? A rival businessman, maybe?" "Well, then why would they go to this extent?" I added. "What's the fucking point in setting this game up? Why not just hire killers to murder us all, plain and simple?" "Well, I don't know," she admitted. "Maybe you're just overthinking this. Let's just focus on surviving this hell for now." The two of us then found an argument going on in the living room when we made it back there. An exasperated Patty was trying to reason with James and Wyatt, who were having a shouting match. "Hey," I raised my voice, "what's going on here?" "Wyatt's lost his fucking mind, Adam," James replied venomously. "He wants to run away." "Well, why would you want to throw your life away, Wyatt?" I asked slowly. I can't." His voice trembled as his eyes turned red with tears. "I can't do this anymore. The love of my life is lying dead just an arm's length away, and in the same room as his brother's corpse, and I helped kill him myself. And now James wants to..." "What does James want?" Allison asked. "To end this once and for all," James answered. "We have the fucking numbers now, for the first time this night. 6 present here against 5 of them. Get out a goddamn piece of paper and let's end this nightmare." "Now, he has a point, Adam," Patty said. "Patricia!" my mother cried out. "Well, it's true, Mom," she insisted. "Or would you rather we all die instead?" My mom then lowered her gaze, ashamed at the fact that she saw her point. "Please," Wyatt begged, "don't ask this of me. I can't. Vincent and Galen, they're just kids. They haven't even graduated college yet. I can't do this to them." "Okay, and do you think it was easy for me to kill my family members?" I asked coldly. "You've known them for what? A couple of years at most. I grew up with them. My whole life. And I fucking murdered them." so don't talk to me about difficult situations. This whole argument is completely pointless, Allison interrupted. There's six of us present here, yes, but there's also six of them. Brad, Freddie's wife Susan, Brenda, Brandy, Vincent, and Galen. Your calculations are off because you probably didn't count Galen, who refused to sign the paper. But he's still alive. And because of that, we would need seven to vote them out. And since George is missing, we are out of luck. James then rested his head in his hands, the shotgun placed precariously on his lap. I saw my mom tense up when my dad was mentioned. I think we were both avoiding the truth at this point, that he was likely dead by now. That doesn't change anything, Wyatt said. His voice was firmer now. I made up my mind. I'm going to try to escape out of here. It's suicide, Wyatt, I warned. You will die. And what if I don't? He asked. What if I'm able to escape and call the police? What if all this could have been avoided if we had just tried to run away? Something you were the first one to suggest. Dude, it's not like that now, I said defensively. Things are different. Only because you want them to be, he said accusingly. You have the most blood on your hands, Adam. So it's natural you're holding on to the admittedly strong possibility that escape is impossible. But I can't do that. I can't do this anymore. Jesus Christ, man, just calm down. Just listen to me. Adam, Allison cut me off gingerly. It's his decision. We can't force him not to do it. We are all adults with free will here, aren't we? We should be free to choose what road we want to go down. Even if it leads to hell, I asked. And she nodded at me. All of us chose to accompany Wyatt to the front door, except James, who was tasked to maintain vigilance near the stairs. You sure you don't want to take a car? My mom asked. Frank was the one who parked them all, Wyatt answered. And considering that Adam told us he was an administrator, it's almost a certainty that they've all been tampered with. I don't want to crash or get blown up halfway down the hill. He shook our hands one by one. All right, I'm off, he said. Make sure to run in a zigzag pattern, Allison suggested. Wyatt nodded and gave us one last look and then took off running. I heard his boots pound the gravel as he dashed down the driveway, before abruptly changing his direction in a roughly 90-degree angle. On and on he went, away from our little corner of hell, trying his hardest to stick to a zigzag pattern as he ran towards freedom and civilization. For a minute, it really looked like he was going to make it. Then, a sharp crack whipped through the air and he stumbled, before falling face first on the ground, ungracefully, bringing all of our hopes crashing down with him. What was that? Patty yelled. A sniper, Allison exclaimed. Get back inside. The hair on my arm stood up as I realized that the shot had come from inside the house. While we were busy killing each other, those fuckers had placed their men in strategic positions right under our noses. Some cultures believe that when divine bad luck enters a person's life, it comes as a deluge of trouble. James came sprinting at us as we were running towards him. My blood ran cold at the utterly terrified look on his face. Vincent reached the shack, he screamed frightfully. How? Patty shouted. Why did you let him get past you? I didn't, he replied as he jogged alongside us towards the sliding door that opened up to the pool. He fucking jumped off the balcony near the shack, broke his leg too. By the time I got him in range of the gun, he crawled his way inside. Oh, fuck, I swore. Oh, God, no, my mom cried. He must be buying a gun, Patty said. No, James said as he placed his hand on my shoulder. He had a paper in his hand. What? How? They don't have the numbers. I couldn't believe it. Well, they do now that Wyatt's dead, Allison replied, especially if they know for sure George is dead too. This made no fucking sense. They must have signed the paper before Wyatt had gone running out, or else the timelines don't match. Not to mention, Dad's name was on the first paper too, so they couldn't have known that he was dead back then, even though he had already gone missing. All right, we must get away from here, I said. Who knows what's going to happen next? And right then I got the answer to my question a second later as seemingly dozens of armed men in what looked like SWAT gear poured out of the shack and started moving towards the house. We ran in different directions, but some of us weren't fast enough and were caught in the initial burst of fire. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw my mom get hit by multiple bullets and collapse on the ground lifelessly. Furiously stamping out my grief and shock, I dove to the ground and began crawling towards the back door of the kitchen that led out to the garage as bullets smashed into fucking everything around me. glass, concrete, wood. The bullets showed no mercy on anything, mercilessly destroying everything in their path. And yet, I fought through the soul-crushing fear and I kept pushing forward, driven at this point purely by an animalistic instinct of survival. I got out to the garage, the uneven rocky floor tearing up my knees and elbows. Then I felt the hand on my leg and my heart almost gave out. But to my relief, it was Allison who had been right on my heels the entire time. Getting up on my hands and knees, I moved behind the false safety of a car and waited for Allison to catch up to me. "No cameras here," she whispered, her voice barely audible, and I nodded. My body covered in sweat, heart pounding dangerously in my chest, I was the most scared I had ever been in my life. Alarm bells were ringing all over my body. Every single cell was screeching, begging me to run away. Call me a cornered rat if you will, but it wouldn't even begin to be close to what I was feeling at that time. And then the door opened, and one of the attackers walked in. I strained my ears as I went completely still, not wanting to give my position away while tracking this guy's movements over the ear-splitting gunfire, which soon stopped. My heart beat in tandem with his footsteps as I ever so quietly tried to keep the breadth of the car between us. His radio crackled and I almost squealed. "Sweeper 7 here, be advised. We've neutralized James and Patricia. Only two more left now. Anyone got eyes on him?" I was devastated and furiously blinked. Not the time to cry now. A slew of negatives came out of the radio as I waited with bated breath from our pursuer to say the same. He stopped and swung his gun around, the mounted flashlight illuminating the ground inches from me. Allison grabbed onto me with vice-like claws and pulled me back. He took a step closer to us and we followed suit, trying to keep away from our deaths. My heart was not going to last long if we kept playing this deadly cat-and-mouse game. It was almost like this guy heard me, because he dropped down on his knees. "Oh my God, this is it. The end is here," I prayed, and God answered through the radio. "I see movement in room 1. I think I located them. We got cameras in here?" Our attacker got back on his feet and walked out, and relief flooded through me so aggressively that little stars danced in front of my eyes. And Allison tugged at my shirt. "What?" I whispered. She pointed at something behind her. I craned my neck and saw some long cylinders stacked in a corner. As we got closer, I realized what they were. Green K bottles. Those long gas cylinders you use in welding. Well, I remember that because Grandpa loved building shit. He would often wag his finger in my face and tell me that's what real men did. For the first time that night, I smiled as I thought of him. Allison was right about the game being set up in a hurry. No way could these things have been kept out in the open otherwise. Silently moving these cylinders closer to the kitchen took almost a minute, with every second feeling like a torturous eternity. Luck was again on our side. They weren't nearby when we started emptying the cylinders. Otherwise, the loud hissing would have been our death knells. Allison smiled at me, her bared teeth reminding me of a tiger shark. She held her finger up and mouthed, "Wait here," at me. Before I could stop her, she crawled into the kitchen, turned on the stove, and hurried back to me. I quickly opened the remaining cylinders as she went and retrieved a can of kerosene, again from the corner that had been our salvation. And now I could hear people nearby. They were coming. Right on time. We darted out of the garage, pouring a line of kerosene on the floor, all the way out to the middle of the driveway. It was a miracle that snipers didn't kill us. In some cultures, when the gods of luck smile down on you, even death itself can't touch you. Allison took out a lighter and lit the trail of kerosene she had set up. The fire spread instantly, racing towards the cylinders at an insane speed. The orange flames turned nearly white as they ate the gas, and with an audible thump, the spectacle started. The fire spread like a living thing, ravishing and devouring everything in its path. Wooden furniture, gas, clothing, flesh, everything became food for the ravenous beast. Panic shouting that soon turned into shrieks and screeches tore through the house. I don't know what had happened with the cylinders and the gas from the stove, but the flames were so powerful that we had to retreat as they even reached the top floor. A window broke upstairs and a charred body came tumbling out. Then, I don't know why, the chemistry being beyond me, there was a huge explosion. The concussion of the blast sent us flying backwards, momentarily knocking us out. I woke up to the sight of bright but tiny lanterns shimmering away, in an infinitely vast black sea above me and the cold, hard ground digging into my wounds from beneath. Little orange sparks drifted in the fiery wind, emanating in waves from the blazing house, adding to the mesmerizing view in front of my bleary eyes. I grunted as I got up on my elbows, the pain in my sides almost slamming me back to unconsciousness. Allison was right behind me, just like she had been this entire hellish night. She coughed, dust and bits of ash constricting her lungs. "Do you think we got 'em all?" she asked. "I sure hope so. Fuck them," I whispered, and I pulled her up. "Fuck all of them. I hope they all burn in hell," I said. Something crashed, and the resultant sound boomed through the area. The fire was eating away at the very foundation of the house, which in turn was beginning to crumble to pieces, just like my family. Allison walked towards the roaring flames, and I called after her. "What are you doing? It's dangerous," I said. She stopped near the corpse that had come flying out the window and began searching it. I gagged at the repulse of an overpowering stench of burnt flesh. "Got it," she exclaimed as she grabbed a pistol off one of the pockets that had almost melted into the skin. But then Winston dropped it. "Oh shit, that's hot." She pulled her scarf off her neck and used it to pick up the gun. "Damn, I hope the flesh hasn't gotten too deep inside the barrel. I don't want this thing jamming on me," she said, and I about threw up. We made our way around to the backyard, trying to stay at a reasonable enough distance from the house so that we could avoid our potential killers. The unstoppable fire, or any sniper foolish enough to still be keeping watch. The back half of the mansion was still mostly safe, but I doubt that would last, looking at the speed with which the flames were leaping from room to room. We stopped and hid behind a bush when the inventory shack came into view, and I saw Vincent slumped against the wall of the shack facing the pool, a sharp hole on his forehead being illuminated by the orange glow from the fire. "Oh, Jesus, why did they kill him?" "Finally tying up loose ends," Allison replied. "I don't think a giant explosion was in their plans." "What do you want to do?" she asked. "We need answers," I said, and then pointed at the shack. "And that is the only place we're going to find him." We tiptoed over to the shack, staying close to the ground. We heard shouting and sporadic gunfire, but thankfully none of the bullets came our way. Once again, I found myself in front of that door, this time my intentions being completely different. With trembling hands, I pushed the door open and came face to face with Frank again. "Fuck it. Kill them all. No one should survive." He was screaming at the radio in his hand, but stopped when he looked at me, his eyes growing so wide it looked like they were going to pop out of his skull. You're still alive." He scrambled for something, presumably a gun, but Allison was faster, quickly firing two shots into his neck and chest, making him fall backwards. I was about to turn around and express my annoyance at Allison for killing the man who could answer our questions and potentially end this, but I didn't have to. Because when he stumbled and fell backwards, he ended up pulling the black cloth down, and while the action was admittedly not as graceful as the curtains in a theater being drawn, the end results were no less spectacular. Weapons and monitors adorned the makeshift control room, and in the center of it all, sitting with a burger in his hand, was my dad, whose jaw dropped when he saw me. "Adam," he said and quickly composed himself. "Thank God you're here. I thought they were going to kill me." "What are you doing here, Dad?" I asked dumbly. "And why the fuck are you eating a hamburger?" "Oh, they offered it to me," he replied hastily. "They've been holding me here for God knows what reason." "I don't understand," I mumbled, the gears in my mind turning, sliding the missing pieces of the puzzle in place, while one part of my brain desperately tried to stop this from happening, as terrified as it was of the horrifying image that lied in store for me when the puzzle was finally completed. "You," Allison said accusingly. "You did this." "Now, wait a minute, Allison," my dad stammered as he put his hands in the air. "I don't know what you're accusing me of, but please, let's not be too hasty here." "Don't fucking move or I will kill you. I swear it," she shouted. "Why are you eating a hamburger?" I continued. "Mom just died. Why would you be in here eating a burger?" "Daisy died?" he asked, sounding a little too shocked for it to be genuine. "Oh, God. There are laptops all around you, watching our every move. How did you not see it?" Anger then began to build up inside me. "You disappeared when this whole thing started. Why did you do that?" Adam, let me explain, all right? Did you do all this? I didn't. Why the fuck are you eating that hamburger, goddammit? Adam, you've got it wrong. It was her. He frantically pointed at Allison. She's the one who did this. What? I looked over at Allie. Don't listen to him. He's lying. She's a gold-digging whore, Adam, he yelled maniacally. She's doing it for the money. You've seen how well she reacted to everything that happened tonight, didn't you? Almost like she knew what was happening, right? She was working for Frank. So you did see everything on the cameras then. I was now accusing him, and he turned pale at that. Dad, why are you lying to me? Is this about the money? No. No, it's not. He shook his head furiously. It's not about the money, okay? I didn't do it. You need to listen to me. He screamed now, tears running down his face. I'm your dad. Why would I kill my own family? Well, that's what I want you to tell me. And I want you to explain to me why you still have that fucking hamburger in your hands, I replied angrily. Maybe it's someone from the company. He grasped at straws in a room completely bereft of them. I blinked to clear my eyes of tears I wasn't even aware of. Why? I yelled. Allison then fired a shot at the floor. Fine, he flinched and then began to sob. All right, I did it. Why? I asked yet again. His body shook as he cried. Was it about the money? And he nodded. There never even was a will, was there? He nodded again, wiped his face, and began talking. The real will just splits the money amongst all living blood relatives. It was pretty standard stuff, actually. So you did it for the money. Was $300 million worth killing all of your family? Your daughter? Your wife? I asked, aghast. Well, I didn't want to. Tell me now, goddammit. It seemed worth it at the time, he replied guiltily. Frank was the one who came to me with the idea. Said we could set it up so that it looked like the family killed each other for the money. He said he knew people who could help us, but that he needed one living member of the family to actually access the money. Just one. I tried to get him to let you and Daisy and Patty live, but he refused. Okay. And you allowed that, of course. Fewer survivors, fewer people to split the money with, right? Well, I didn't think it would turn out like this, Adam, he mumbled. Well, what did you not think about, Dad? That you would have to watch your kids get murdered on a camera, or that I would come in here and catch you? I tried really hard to get him to change his mind, Adam. He was whining now pathetically. I didn't want you to die. But you ultimately made peace with it, didn't you? Jesus Christ, Dad, Patty loved you. Your own daughter, she thought the world of you. I'm sorry. And what about Jonathan? Allison asked. Is he even a real lawyer? He shook his head no. And those assassins, why send them out? The other group didn't have the numbers, so why? Why did you even break your own rules? Brandy's baby, he answered. The paper had her name too. Brianna, Vincent said. That's what they were going to name her. Frank thought it was hilarious and decided to humor them. It doesn't matter now, they've all been killed. Vincent, Galen, Brenda, Brandy, Brad, Susan. They're all gone. You're the only two that are left. I was furious. My dad saw the look on my face and shrank back in fear. Listen, we can fix this. Frank is dead. I can call them off. Tell them that the game is over and just pay everybody. We can split the money together. $150 million each. Okay? $150 million for me. And $150 million for you, Adam. How's that sound? That's nice, right? My blood boiled at his stupidity. You've got to be shitting me right now. You still care about this fucking money. What is wrong with you? No, no, please, he said as he reached for the radio. I can fix this. I'll show you. My dad was lying again, because I could see that he wasn't reaching for the radio. He was going for a gun. And Allison, next to me, saved my life yet again, and turned me into an orphan. I quickly shut my eyes to stop myself from seeing it, but it was too late. The image of my dead father was seared into my memory. I wondered, as I would thousands of times later on in my life, whether I could have done anything to change this, whether there was any signs that I missed, whether I should have somehow known that he was capable of doing something like this at all. I once remember speaking to a friend of mine involved in a property dispute with her sister. She would tell me how she was blindsided by court cases after her mother died, how her own sister pounced on the chance to extract as much wealth as she possibly could. Does money always do this to a person? Or were they always this way and our own love and naiveness just prevents us from seeing the truth? I guess I would really never know the answer to that question because it is not easy to judge these things in hindsight. We can always find little factoids that we can mold to fit our own biased perception of events. Adam, Adam, I felt the hand on my shoulder bringing me back to reality. We need to get out of here now. How? I sighed. How many of them are still living? Will they even let us leave tonight? Well, the masterminds are all dead, right? There's no one left to pay them for the job, Allie said and picked up the radio and tossed it at me. We killed their friends. Do you think they'll just let us go? What if they want to kill us for revenge? Adam, I'm willing to bet on the greed and selfishness of mercenaries right now. I pressed the button. Hello, is anyone listening to this? There was no response and I continued. George and Frank are dead. I repeat, those who hold your contract or were planning to pay you are now gone. We killed them. There's nothing keeping you here, and you should all leave. I got nothing but static in response. What does this mean? I asked Allison. Are they planning on killing us or letting us go? She shrugged. I don't know. I guess there's only one way to find out. Well, I don't want to die, not after all this. She then grabbed my hand. Well, let's go. Together we hobbled out of the house, leaving the burning ruin behind us once and for all. Not once did we see a single sign of another human being. Either the surviving mercenaries had all left, or they were just that good. We stopped at the edge of the property, which looked empty and forlorn now. You ready? She asked, with my arm around her for support, and I nodded. Thank you, Allie, for saving my ass repeatedly tonight. I'd have long been dead if not for you. She smiled, her blood-stained cheeks somehow turning redder. I love you too, silly. We took one more step, and no bullets came looking for our skulls.